please thank you for joining us on the 45th episode of Final Girls Horrorcast, the show where we discuss some of the horror, thriller, and sci-fi movies currently available on your favorite streaming sites. I'm Amy.
And I'm Carly.
On today's episode, we'll be discussing a couple of anthology films, Southbound and XX. Ooh. Just a heads up for you new listeners, we are a spoiler-heavy podcast, so listen at your own risk. Southbound is currently available to stream on Amazon, and XX is on Netflix. I recommend that you check them out. But before we jump into those films, let's get started with a segment that we like to call...
Trailer Trash Talk.
Today's trailer is Mother! Exclamation point, with a theatrical release date of September 15th. It's written and directed by Darren Aronofsky. Aronofsky. It's fine. I knew I practiced it. It's fine. Darren Aronofsky, who is well known for Requiem for a Dream, Pi, Black Swan, and The Wrestler. Very excited about this. And we also have the IMDb summary, which is a couple's relationship is tested when uninvited guests arrive at their home, disrupting their tranquil existence.
I call bullshit on this IMDb summary.
I call bullshit on it too.
Good. I'm glad we are both bullshit artists.
But bullshit artist. So, now I'm just thinking of the Greasy Strangler.
Sorry, me too. I apologize.
You can't do this to me. I will not be able to think about anything else for the remainder of the episode. You hootie tootie disco cutie you.
For some reason, like, it's been in my head. I think I saw, like, a meme or something that said bullshit. And, like, for some reason, like, bullshit artist, just, like, I can't get it out of my head.
It's like the more you think about the Greasy Strangler, the more you like it.
Oh, accurate. I hope that you and I get to, like, drink and that movie together someday.
Right? We totally have to. We are not talking about that movie, though. Right now, we're talking about Mother! Oops. Exclamation point.
Exclamation Carly. Point.
Yeah. So, we've been kind of waiting for this trailer for a long time.
Since Mother's Day, in fact.
Yes. I'm really excited about this. I love Darren Aronofsky. I love Requiem for a Dream. Well, it's hard to say you love Requiem for a Dream, right? It's kind of a terrible thing to love.
I loved Modern Horrors talking about that when they were like, yeah, when it like came out, everybody was like, that's like my life. It's like, no, it's not. It's not your life.
It's nobody's life unless you're dead.
I was like, it's so true.
It's a great movie, though. So is Pi. I love Black Swan. And The Wrestler is great. I mean, most of his films just like home runs for me. So super excited about this. Love Jennifer Lawrence. Ed Harris, Michelle Pfeiffer,
Domhnall
Gleeson, Kristen Wiig. We got some like
took me
awesome
for a loop.
People. Javier Bardem, of course. So just all in all, just I'm really excited about
it. Super excited. And
I like this trailer better than the teaser trailer. Although the teaser trailer was nice, you kind of got a feel, but I got more of an idea that there's an actual plot happening in this movie with the full-length trailer, and that made me feel better about it.
And also that it's going to be more of a horror-esque thriller-type movie.
Right. It certainly looks more horror with the full-length trailer. The teaser trailer, I felt like it was going to be very psychological. Not necessarily saying that this isn't going to be psychological, but a little bit more of a storyline feel compared to how I originally thought this movie might go. So
I'm stoked, man. Ed Harris.
I'm stoked. God. And the thing is, I love how they just keep hearing the knocking on the door.
Yeah.
And just random people appearing and random people walking. That's
and
like
the music,
my nightmare.
That like screechy violin or whatever. It's so
I
good.
I love screechy
it's-
violin.
Me too.
Yes.
It's going to be so good.
Screechy violin in all of my horror movies,
yes, please.
Please.
Thank you, Darren. Yeah.
I just, like, nothing freaks me out more as a person with anxiety issues than someone knocking on my door.
Totally.
It's like...
yes.
If I am not expecting a knock on my door and I hear a knock on my door, instant anxiety attack.
I legitimately stand there and don't move until they go away.
It's like silent. I mute the TV as if it's impossible that they heard it previously.
I like hush my dogs. We're not answering the door. If you come to my door ever, I probably won't answer it. And you can just imagine me in my living room like frozen or hide. Yeah. I might hide as well. That might be a factor.
No. I'll run into the other room and like peek out my window.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Oh my God. I'm sure there's many of us.
Oh, that's amazing.
We get a lot of like random people knocking on our door too, and it freaks me out, especially when I'm alone. I'm like, fuck you, I'm not answering the door.
Absolutely not. I will never answer my front door.
Ugh, so creepy. So that alone makes me want to like
obviously see this movie. Amy and I are already horrified.
So. I'm already horrified and excited. But I'm supposed to believe that Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem are married, though.
I totally thought the same thing. I was like, bullshit.
I love you so much today, like more than usual.
Thanks, I love you hilarious. Too. It's gonna be a good episode, guys. We're it starting is. Strong.
Oh my God. So yeah, but she's like, she's younger than I am, and Javier Bardem is way older than us. What is he, like in his 50s?
He is a gentleman and a scholar.
I'm not saying that he's not handsome. He is. He's handsome.
I mean, that's cool.
Although every time I see Javier Bardem, all I can think of is No Country for Old Men.
And me too. He creeps me out, if we're going to be honest.
That handsomeness immediately evaporates. He's going to kill me
with like an airsoft thing.
Right?
Right in my skull. I don't find that attractive.
No, I mean, when you first glance at him, you're like, oh, okay, he's a attractive, but then, you know, you remember that.
You're gonna
and then
say you're he's like, okay,
no, you're terrifying. You just have a better haircut now, but you're still terrifying.
It's true.
You don't have a bowl cut anymore.
No Country for Old Men definitely haunts me.
Fuck. So terrifying in that. But anyway, I'm excited. I'm really excited. Let's do this. Can't wait to see it.
I'm stoked. And it's coming out fairly soon. What, September 15th, you said?
September 15th.
Amazing.
I know.
I'm in.
Something to look forward to. I mean, we have so many horror movies coming out that I just can't wait to see.
I'm going to save all my pennies.
Just fucking add it to the list, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds like a quadruple thumbs up from us. So let's move on.
Wonderful.
To our next movie.
Our first movie.
Our first
that
movie.
That we've seen.
Yes.
We are going
that's
to be
a non-trailer.
Yeah, that's not a trailer that you can watch. Is 2015's Southbound. We've got the IMDb summary as five interlocking tales of terror follow the fates of a group of weary travelers who confront their worst nightmares and darkest secrets over one long night on a desolate stretch of desert highway.
Accurate. Fairly accurate. Are they all travelers?
No, not the last family.
That's true, but that kind of eases its way in.
Yeah, totally.
The rest of it. So instead of talking about all our directors and everything at once, I figure we'll go through each segment. We will be rating and ranking each segment, and then we will go on to the next movie. Not a lot of research was done for this episode. Most of these are fairly new movies, and I figured since we have so many segments to talk about, that we will just skip all of that, by the way. Is that cool?
It's awesome. I'm into it.
All right. So just in case, for you listeners, if I don't give you any extra information this episode, it's because I didn't do any research. And you're just going to have to live with that. Okay. So let's start with the first segment called The Way Out, which is directed by Radio Silence. That's what this trio is called. It's Chad Vigneia, Matt Bettinelli Ulpin, and Rob Polonowski.
Cool.
Maybe. Yeah. And it's written by Matt Bettinelli Ulpin. So this segment, usually in an anthology series, I want a big bang for my first sequence. I want something that draws me in and makes me interested and makes me want to keep watching. In terms of success, I think that worked for me.
I loved the opening.
Yeah. So basically, we have these two guys who are bloodied. Looks like they've been through a little bit of shit.
They've had an evening.
They've had some time.
Yeah.
And they are driving away in their pickup on this old dusty road. And come across a gas station, stop in for gas, get cleaned up, you notice something's following them. It's like a skull.
It kind of looks, you're not going to know this, but it kind of is very reminiscent of a Dementor from Harry Potter.
I know what Dementors are.
Okay. Well, I'm glad.
Yeah.
But, like, if, like, a Dementor was naked and didn't have the weird cloak, like, I imagine this is what the Dementor would look like underneath their creepy death outfit.
Right. So, basically, Dementors are – naked Dementors are following these gentlemen through their travel down the road and tend to just catch up with them easily. And there's multiple of them, and they just kind of appear. You'll see them floating in the distance, this floating skeleton – skull with like a spinal cord attached to it and like nerve endings falling down.
Amazingness.
Eventually catches up to them, kills one guy, follows the other guy into a hotel room in which he is in a loop where he cannot save his daughter.
Exactly. Basically. Yeah.
So in terms of positives and negatives for this, I think that the story's really good. I think it's eye-catching. I'm interested. Upon first glance, the naked Dementors are very frightening. But I have a little bit of issue with the CGI. Now,
it was cheesy, but at the same time, I'm like, but how much money are we talking about here?
Right. I think it's passable for the budget of this film. I don't think it's terrible. I just think in comparison to the quality of the story that we're getting, it's a little bit distracting.
I honestly think that's why I let it go, is because I'm like already sucked into this movie. I'm already like, okay, what's happening here? And then I saw the CGI Dementors and I was like, okay, it was kind of like reminiscent of like Scorpion from Mortal Kombat. And I was like, that's okay. Like, where are we going next? You know, I definitely let it go.
It's something you can let go. But it is a little bit distracting. But the gore is pretty fun. And they're effective. I think especially from a distance when you first start seeing them, you're like, what the fuck is that?
Agreed.
Yeah. It's a little less terrifying when you see it up front and personal, but that doesn't happen till the end of the segment. Exactly. Whatever. Yeah.
You're already in it. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think all in all, the Way Out segment is fairly successful and a good choice for a first segment.
Agreed. Okay. So Siren, directed by Roxanne Benjamin, written by Roxanne Benjamin and Susan Burke. We follow three girls who are in a van and in a band. They are driving and they get a flat tire and they're like, fuck, let's have some beer. And then we got a couple creepy old people in a station wagon who drive by. And at first they're very hesitant, but they end up going with them. And they eat weird meat and get possessed. Well, two out of the three of them. They start like vomiting tar water.
Yes.
And the vegetarian, the smart one of the bunch, who doesn't eat the gross tar meat, does not get possessed. And then there's like a witchery that happens. And
there's some witchery. There's some demon stuff.
A bear trap involved.
Yes.
I liked this one. It was weird.
I did too.
It was like weirdly creepy. And there's also some hints at like another, like a fourth dying.
Yeah, so basically we find out that these girls are in a band together and one of the girls dies one night when they're out partying and they just leave her to her own devices to get home.
Yeah.
Because one of the girls wants to go off and have sex with some dude.
She sleeps around.
Yeah. So the one girl that got left alone got killed. So we don't know how, but the family that takes these band girls in somehow knows about it and makes side comments. So in this segment especially, you'll see people knowing – in all of these segments, you'll see people on the outside knowing things they shouldn't know.
Right.
And oftentimes the characters actually recognize it, but it's still like, okay, There's definitely a theme there.
Like when they first get to this new house and the older woman is like showing them to their room, she says things like, sorry about Alice. And then she'll like say something else right after.
Right. And pretend like she didn't say that.
Right.
But yeah, things like that happen. They know things they shouldn't necessarily know.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, the main girl gets away. Now, is this bitch face from Starry Eyes? It is, isn't it?
She looked so familiar.
She's got to be the girl from Starry Eyes. I was like thinking it the whole time. I'm like, oh, that's the bitch girl from Starry Eyes.
I kept thinking to myself, why does she look so familiar? But I think I was too lazy to IMDb it.
I was, but I'm fairly certain that it is bitch face from Starry Eyes.
I support it.
I really like this segment. I think it's really fun. You know, due to time restraints, I don't want to dig too deep into it. But I think there's the creep factor is turned all the way up in this
one. The boys are the terrifying.
There's some twin boys that just
are terrifying. They're so creepy.
They're so creepy. Effectively creepy.
Super effectively creepy.
Yeah, they say things like, shouldn't there be four of you?
Yeah.
You know, because there's three girls.
I really liked that because the segue from the first story into the second story is fairly seamless.
Yes.
It's like there's the guy who's like trying to save his daughter in this room. And then like a cleaning lady closes the door and then continues walking past the door that one of the siren girls opens too. Like it was really great. And I really appreciate in anthologies when they do that, when they aren't just like four shorts posted right after one another, when it's really
doesn't quite intertwine like Trick or Treat does,
right.
But it does have kind of a Trick or Treat feel where you can see other characters walking past others.
And you can tell it's in the same universe.
And they're all listening to the same radio station, which is talking about demons and stuff and riding on the highway of darkness.
Which kind of reminded me of Pontypool.
Yeah, definitely a Pontypool theme to this radio dude.
Yeah.
Like a kind of religious Pontypool. Like if Pontypool was religious.
Pontypool took place in hell.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I feel like of all the segments, this one, to me, I thought could be a full-length film. I would watch it and be into it.
Oh, 100%. I agree.
Because it's really interesting, and I think even with a full-length feature, they could go even deeper and we could find out more about these stories.
Yeah.
Because we have an idea of what's going on in all these stories, but I feel like all of them kind of, you could dig in a little more. This one especially, I think, would make a great full-length
feature. This one could definitely be built out because you have so much bulk of a story that is really interesting that they hinted at that I think it would round out really well.
Right. So Sadie, who is our main girl from Siren, gets away. She gets out of the bear trap. She runs to the highway and promptly gets hit by a car. And the car is driven by the person starring in our next segment, which we called Accident, which is called The Accident. We don't call it that. That's what it's called. It's directed and written by David Bruckner. And this one is by far, for me, the most horrific of all the stories.
I was watching it like, what is happening? Like, what? I'm pretty sure I get distracted by my cell phone very easily. And when I was watching this movie and this segment in particular, I had no interest in it. Like,
really?
I was just like, and I'm pretty sure this is my face when I was watching this movie, like, what? Well, this segment, I guess. There was so much gross.
There was a lot of gross.
There was a lot of gross and
a lot of gross.
What the fuck are you doing?
You know, it's funny. The first time I watched this, I was like, oh, you know, but the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, okay. I think once I knew what to expect, I could like kind of enjoy it a little more.
She gets like nailed by the car.
Yeah.
Like,
so poor Sadie gets hit by this car. She gets away, but not really, because now she's dying.
Because the husband was on his cell phone looking at pictures of his wife. Not in a dirty way, but he was like, oh, I'm going to help you pick out what you're going to wear tomorrow.
Yes, she was picking. He was helping her pick out her dresses, and it's an empty road. And I mean, a lot of us would do this. I wouldn't, because I'm a good person. Just kidding.
It's probably like 3 a.m. in the middle of nowhere.
It's the middle of nowhere. It's a straight road to fucking nowhere.
Yeah,
you know, no cars in sight. And if there were one, you would notice because of lights. You wouldn't expect someone to run out in the street. So he hits her really hard, and she is not in good shape. Broken bones. Her legs are twisted in ways your legs should not be twisted. She's got bleeding everywhere, and just, it's not a pretty sight. Poor, poor Sadie. So this guy kind of looks like he's thinking of leaving her. A little bit.
He contemplated it.
He contemplates it for a moment, then decides to do the right thing, calls 911, right? And the 911 call starts off fairly normal and slowly gets more and more sinister and terrible as she tells him to drive into the nearest town because they can't figure out where he is. His GPS isn't working. He's in the middle of nowhere, but he can see lights ahead. So she tells him to put the body in the car and to drive to the nearest town, which is completely abandoned. He finds a hospital, also completely abandoned. And the 911 dispatcher puts on a surgeon, and the surgeon tells him to perform life-saving surgery on this poor, poor victim that he's basically killed. It goes very wrong. He kills her, and
he squeezes her the life out of her lungs. Like, yeah, he doesn't just kill her. He, in like probably the most brutal way, I'd imagine.
He has his arm in her cavity,
yeah,
in her chest cavity, and is squeezing her lung, and then she dies
and pops her lung.
Yeah, and he's just standing there with his arm in her chest. For a very long time, tries to escape, and he's locked in the building.
My favorite shot is when there's like, you can see like the angle is from her head, like looking down on him as he's like putting his arm in her, and you just see like the tear. And I was just like, oh, that's so effective.
It's really effective.
That's so effective.
It's really, really effective. and yeah, they all laugh at him when he kills her. They know, again, the voices on the phone, there's like two or three of them. They all know things they shouldn't. They know his name. They know.
And they randomly pop up.
They know
up.
How he can get out of the hospital. They know he's stuck in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So they know things that they shouldn't also. And eventually he gets out and he gets a car that looks just like his, but isn't mangled from hitting someone, and he just gets to drive away.
So he's the luckiest one of the bunch.
Yes, but is he? Because is he just doomed to continue this accident over and over again?
True.
Based on what I've seen here, it kind of seems like a lot of these people are in a loop.
Yeah.
And even in the, especially in the poster for Southbound, it's just like, it's a loop.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
So you kind of get the impression that these things keep happening over and over again.
They're in
hell. Then I also think that maybe he might have redeemed himself by trying to do the right thing. Possibly. If you want to be optimistic about it.
I mean, I think that we can be here because he's the only person that we see leave.
It's true. He drives away. We don't know if he's still going to be stuck on that same road or what have you.
We don't know if maybe previously he just kept going. He got in his car going.
That's true. Maybe he rectified the situation by correcting it, or at least trying to. Poor Sadie, though. Ugh, when her leg falls off, I can't. He picks her up and puts her on a stretcher in the hospital, and her leg just
falls right off.
Falls right off. Woo-wee! That's a good one. It got me.
Well,
got me. Okay. And then so he drives away, and we see a woman finishing the sentence of the 911 dispatcher and hanging up a payphone. And on to our next segment. This is the same woman from Starry Eyes yet again.
Was she a casting director?
film casting director.
Okay.
Yeah, in Starry Eyes.
Who was the bartender in this? Okay, so we follow her into a bar and she...
I love that you asked that. I know who the bartender is.
I'm like about to look it up because the whole time...
Don't look it up.
I couldn't accept that, like, obviously I was watching this movie, but I was so distracted because I was like, who the fuck is that? Like, I've seen
him. He's from Orange is the New Black.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was like, I literally watched a show with him in it all the time.
Did we say who that was directed and written by?
We did not.
Did you do that?
Oh. Oh, I may have missed that. Jailbreak was directed by Patrick Horvath and written by Dallas Hallam and Patrick Horvath. Mabby.
No worries.
Gentlemen. we follow her into a bar and she goes in, sits down, asks for a drink, and they all give her shit for like not closing the door. And then this guy barges in with a shotgun and he's looking for his sister. And is one of the dudes a werewolf? I'm not really sure what.
I think he's just like a demon man. Guy.
That's fine.
Yeah.
He gets shot in the arm. And then they steal Orange is the New Black guy. And he like makes him go in the car and he's like, you're going to take me to my sister. And so he drives out to like a burger joint, it looks like. Mm-hmm. Like an old drive-through burger joint kind of thing. And they get out of the car and he points to a wall and he's like, you have to go in this, in there's the door. And then we discover there's like a tattoo that this guy has on his hand and it's like of a weird symbol and an eye. And when he puts it up, he can see like another dimension where there's this door. And so the dude goes into the door, finds his sister who wants to be there, which makes this even more awkward.
She's a tattoo artist in hell.
Yeah.
Basic dream job.
Yeah, life goals. And he's like trying to get her out of here.
Unaged. She looks perfect.
Yeah. Oh, this guy looks old, kind of like Bobby from Sons of Anarchy. He's like an older dude. Looking for his sister, just trying to get his sister out of hell. And he causes a stir. He shoots some demon in the head and then steals her. And they drive where they're not supposed to drive, basically.
They drive off the road in hell.
She tries to give him a couple outs.
Yes.
He doesn't take it.
Nope.
And then he gets pulled out of the station wagon by other demons.
By a bunch of naked old white bald men.
Yeah. And basically, it seems like gets ripped apart as his sister backs out and like probably drives back to her tattoo shop.
She does drive back to her tattoo shop smiling. Ear to ear. Super happy to be there.
What a jerk.
Drives back, and then we run into our next segment.
Take it away.
This was my least favorite and felt the most like a throwaway segment.
This might have been my least favorite. It was kind of a toss-up.
I didn't like this one as much. I didn't feel like there was as much story there. I didn't really care about the characters as much. A little bit of a twist that kept it interesting, but all in all, it was it felt like the fastest segment.
May have been because it kind of bled into our first segment.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, so that was that segment. So then we merge into our final segment which is called The Way In. It's the same director-writer team as The Way Out, and it's directly related to The Way Out. So, you know, The Way In, The Way Out. Except it's reversed for some reason, which is fine. I don't know why I guess it is the way into hell.
That's how they get into hell.
So it's The Way Into Hell, and The Way Out is The Way Out of Hell. Okay, cool. I got it. So in this segment, we basically find out how the two gentlemen in the first segment became bloodied and became terrorized as they were because they went to kill a man for killing his daughter. They have masks on. They terrorize the house. They let the daughter get away because they feel...
He's got a soft spot. He's basically avenging his daughter.
Right. He's not going to want to kill someone else's daughter. His daughter died.
Right.
But he just wants to kill the guy that did it. I also have a feeling that there's probably some molestation here, and it does not make this easier to like watch. They don't say it, but you just get the feeling. Like, why else is an old dude murdering a small girl? Like, there's...
I don't know, man. They seemed like there was some sort of cults thing going on, because they were talking about bringing their daughter, like something was going on with their daughter. This was not my least favorite segment. This was my second to least favorite segment because of that fact. It seemed like there was...
I thought they were, like, bringing her to college.
No, because they were talking about it, like, in hush. Like, I mean, maybe. But they kept on saying, oh, like, she's not ready. Like, are you ready? Like, is this going to be a thing? I don't know. Maybe. But I felt like this was obviously, like, they live in hell. Like, this isn't a normal place.
Oh, see, I didn't feel that way. I felt like... Because when the guy whispered into the wife's ear, he told her what happened. And she looked at the husband disgusted, like, I thought you stopped doing this. I genuinely felt like he...
Okay, I can see that.
That he molested and killed this young girl.
Cool. I was in a different mindset then. So maybe this was my least favorite, because there wasn't a lot of...
I liked it. I liked it because it was like, you know, these guys weren't in hell until they did what they did.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it.
So they basically murder the wife.
They murder the wife
in front of the husband.
I don't get behind that at all.
That's not fair.
No, she had nothing to do with it. But of course, I mean, maybe if she had knowledge that these types of things were happening, maybe. Not that that's worth killing someone over, but I could maybe understand why they did that. And then they killed the husband, and then the daughter attacks them, even though they tell her to go away, and then she also gets killed. And then we see the Dementors, the naked Dementors, arise from the ground and kill their friend that the dudes are with.
They, like, come out of their bodies. That's why I kind of thought that this was, like... There was some sort of weird, like, bullshit going on.
They don't come out of their bodies. They come out of the ground.
Oh, I thought they came out of, like, directly, like, out of the corpses, because there were three of them.
No.
That was probably whatever. They came out of the
ground. Whoops. I mean, if they...
I wasn't even drinking when I watched this movie.
No, I mean, maybe. Maybe you're right. I just kind of took it as that was their demons coming to haunt you for what you did.
Now I have to watch this again. And
I mean, there's probably no yes or no to that. I mean, it could go either way.
Yeah.
But they didn't come out of the bodies. They came out of the ground. Okay. I remember that distinctly.
I remember in that one, well, obviously, because the ground is breaking away as they're driving their truck backwards, right?
Yes. So then, yeah, the hell grounds open up, and then the naked Dementors come out.
Yeah.
So... There's our movie, all five segments. Mm-hmm. It ends the way it starts. They go into the gas station. He says, I had a hard night, and that's the end of it. So I really like this movie. Was this your first time seeing it, Carly?
It was, because I know that we've been talking about doing this movie pretty much since we started this podcast, which BT Dubs was a year ago this past weekend.
Wow.
What?
Our first episode wasn't released till the 26th.
Happy anniversary.
That's a happy anniversary.
So, yeah, I knew that we'd been, you know, talking about doing this movie for a long time. And I like to wait. If, like, I know that we're going to do something, I usually like to wait, because what if I don't like it and I don't want to watch it again?
Okay.
But I loved this movie.
I'm glad you loved it.
I really did.
Okay, because I thought you were trying to tell me earlier that you didn't like it.
No, I really liked this movie a lot. I was, like, in it. Like, the second that it started, I was stoked.
Yeah. It's a really good anthology film.
Yeah.
And it's not super widely known. It's definitely worth checking out. I mean, even if you haven't seen it and you heard us talking about it, I still think it's worth watching. It's a good time. It really is. And even the worst segment is still fairly good and better than lots of other anthology segments I've seen.
Agreed. And, so. I even when we were rating, because I scored these, like, with written whatever. But, yeah, I had kind of had a hard time putting these in, like, a 1 to 5. I think there's 5 of them.
Okay. Well, let's rank them.
Okay.
Can we just rank them? Is that okay to do?
Yes.
Let's consider the way in. And do you want to consider the way in and the way out the same segment?
I mean, I did
that in my rating.
I pretty much ranked the way out and the way in similarly as I did Siren and the Accident.
Okay. So to you, all three of those segments were basically...
I still did them on a 1 to 5 based on which segment I liked a little bit more.
Go ahead and tell them then.
Okay, so The Way Out, I thought was a 3.
Okay.
The Siren was my favorite, so that was a 1. Accident was a 2. Jailbreak was my least favorite, so that was a 5. Weigh In was 4.
Okay. I felt I liked Siren the best, so I started with that one. Highest rank for Siren. Then The Way In, The Way Out was my second highest rank. Then The Accident, and then Jailbreak as my final. Although The Accident and The Way In, The Way In are pretty even.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying I had a really hard time ranking these.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, I love this because it has almost like a Twilight Zone feel to it, you know? Especially The Accident has like a really, it's like a really gory Twilight Zone episode.
I loved it. I really liked this movie a lot. Like, yeah, I will watch this movie again.
Yeah.
100%.
If you like anthologies, be sure to check out Southbound if you haven't already.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. Okay. Well, then let's move on to XX from 2017. The IMDb summary is 4 short horror films that are directed and written by women. Really, IMDb? That's all we're getting, huh?
Whoop-de-doo.
I think that's a little bit okay. Now,
to be fair, that is how it was marketed. So
sure. Now I've heard I was really excited for this movie. Heard a lot of bad reviews about it. Heard a lot of people talking shit on it, and chose to wait a while to see it. I watched it fairly recently, within the past couple months, I believe, for the first time. So this is my second viewing. But I personally really like this movie. I was surprised at how much I liked it, considering how many people whose opinion I typically agree with did not like it. So
I did not like this movie, I will say it.
And I understand why people don't like it.
I watched this movie first, and so you can imagine how much I love Southbound after watching this movie.
It's just a different kind of movie.
Totally.
It's not really... It's horror, definitely. Some segments more than others, but it's also a commentary on the stresses of being a woman. I found a lot of it relatable. So to me, I enjoyed it. Some of the segments I liked more than others, but I really actually liked this. Probably more, and like I said, more than I thought I would. So let's start. And we can kind of discuss what we liked and didn't like. Let's try to give a quicker overview of these since we're running short on time.
Sure.
So first up is The Box. It's directed and written by Jovanka Vukovic. And directed and written by Jovanka Vukovic and based on the short story by Jack Ketchum. Basic synopsis of this one is... It's Christmas time. A woman's traveling with her kids on the train from New York City to their home. The young boy asks the man on the train what's in the box. He has a gift on his lap. Asks him what's in the box. The gentleman shows the boy what's in the box. The kid stops eating. He doesn't look disturbed. He doesn't look upset. He just no longer wants to eat anymore. He has no reason for it. Eventually tells his sister what he saw. She no longer wants to eat. Eventually tells the father what they saw. He no longer wants to eat. And the three die, and the wife never knows what's in the box. The end.
They all starve to death.
But look fairly content with their choice to do so.
They have no desire to eat, unless it's human flesh in a dream or whatever.
Well,
that was weird.
That's a dream, sweetie. That's not real. Right? I mean, do you really think that they wanted to eat human flesh?
No.
That was all symbolic.
I mean, I'm sure the box was too. The entire time I watched this movie, I was like, just quoting Seven in my head. What's in the fucking box? What's in the box? That's all
I thought
of. You
don't want to know what's in the box, obviously. If you knew it was in the box, Carly, you would stop eating.
I don't know. If you're a mom and you're going to like let your kid look at. Also, who the fuck has a present in a box that's not all the way wrapped? Except for someone.
That's like a normal Hollywood thing.
I know.
Where they wrap the lid to the box separately than the rest of the box.
Bullshit. Bullshit. Again, sorry. I'm so sorry. I can't.
Stop saying bullshit artist.
I apologize.
So
it's going to be the next question.
This movie, I really love this short. I like that there's this, like, the family is in on this thing and the wife can't understand. And there's this struggle between her wanting to be a good mother, but also wanting to give her children freedom. And the struggles of being a parent and knowing if what you're going to do is going to fuck your children up for life. I felt all of that. And I'm not a parent, but I felt all of that from her. And that dream sequence, there's a dream sequence that as Carly described, she's laying on the kitchen table and the family is happily eating a portion of her leg. They have it cut like a ham and they are eating it on plates and with forks and knives. And she is just smiling as she bleeds all over the table and her family consumes her. I mean, if that's not symbolic, I don't know what it is.
The only thing relatable to me is when the husband's like, your son's not eating. And she's like, well, I have to eat.
Yeah.
Me too, girl.
Yeah. I know, right? The food in this segment looks amazing.
It really does.
If you're watching this segment and you're not starving afterwards, like, you're not human.
I watched this movie in the morning and I was like, fuck, I just need to go eat some food right
now. I need to eat all of this food. And they're slowly, like, their meals start off extremely extravagant and slowly get less extravagant to the point where they're getting fast food. But honestly, even that fast food looks fucking phenomenal. It looks so good. I like how the kids are happy. I like how, you know, they take them to the doctor and the doctor's like, I don't know what's wrong with them. Psychological something probably. And, you know, there's nothing wrong. We never find out what's wrong. And she's doomed to live the rest of her life not knowing what she did wrong. And the responsibility she feels as a wife, mother, and woman for her family's well-being and how she's just going to be haunted with that for the rest of her life. To me, that's terrifying. And I think and maybe it speaks to me more as I don't speak about it often on the podcast, but I have anxiety issues. And as someone with anxiety issues, and I don't think this is just strictly women, but I think women specifically feel this type of anxiety in which you worry about the happiness of those around you and feel like you can directly affect change in their emotions.
See, I didn't get that from this segment because the husband seemed more concerned than she did the entire time, except until they died. That's when we start seeing that she's like, I just want to know it was in the box. Even like at Christmas, like she never seemed particularly worried. So, like, I don't...
Because they're happy, though. Because they're not... They don't seem troubled. They're starving and dying, but they're still happy. And there's gotta be... Again, I'm not a parent, but there's gotta be a part, and I would think as a mother, it's particularly hard to watch your children do something that you might feel could be harmful.
But she doesn't even care at the beginning. Like, that's what blows me.
Like, really feel like she doesn't care? I didn't get the feeling that she didn't care.
I definitely did because she didn't. Like, the father was worried. The father was noticeably worried. And, like, I know I don't have children, but, like, if one of my dogs didn't eat for a day, I would be taking him to the vet because I'd be freaked out. Like,
right.
I don't know. Like, I didn't get that whole thing from this because it literally, like, even when she was sitting in the hospital with them, like, she was comforting them and she was there for them, but it didn't seem like she was really caring for them or, like, obsessed with finding out what was in the box until after they were already gone and she, like, wasn't part of the club. Like,
but don't you think that's part of the a choice I made as a person is my fault now that they're not here? Like, she's obviously distressed and upset at the end of the short. And obviously affected at the end of the short. And she has discussions with her husband. She doesn't want to overreact to the situation. He might just have the flu. It's not that she's not worried. She's just not reacting to the situation in which, in a way that her husband deems appropriate. Now, again, I find that relatable. People expect you to react and be certain ways. And then she obviously takes responsibility for it at the end, and wants to just be with them. She just wants to belong to their little club that they have now. They obviously know something she doesn't. Again, I'm not saying it's perfect, but I think that the idea is there. I'm curious to read the short story by Jack Ketchum to see if there's maybe some more clues and more information there. And I wonder how much this story was changed based on the short story. I see where you're coming from, Carly. And I totally see where you're
coming from, too. Like, 100%. I just, like, it missed the mark for me, and I was just bored. And, like, I wasn't sympathetic to any of the characters. Even I have anxiety as well. And, like, I don't know. Maybe I just have, like, it's fine. I wasn't a huge fan of this segment.
I felt like a lot of these segments were anxiety driven.
It set the pace
in ways that I could relate. And maybe I'm reading into it in a way that is beneficial to my mind.
Honestly, you're probably reading into it the way that it was intended. I just didn't see it that way, I guess.
But no, and you're right that she doesn't seem affected, but she is affected. Like, she's grabbing for her cigarettes. She's looking for a way to cope with the situation. And I think that she's trying to keep a level head, mm-hmm. right? Her husband's exploding and she wants him to not explode. Let's deal with this rationally. She's trying to keep an even head. And that unfortunately works to her disadvantage, or maybe her advantage. She's the only one still alive. I'm just saying. Okay. No consensus, and there's no right or wrong answer to this.
Totally.
I think it's like reading a poem, right? You get out of it what you get out of it, and you don't what you don't. So I feel like a lot of these segments are that way. Let's move on to the birthday party. Do you want to intro that one?
Sure. So the birthday party, directed by Annie Clark, written by Roxanne Benjamin and Annie Clark. We have Chick from Ever After, Cinderella Story. And she was in that movie with Elijah Wood that's on Netflix. It seemed good.
You're doing really good,
I got
Carly.
Nothing.
Keep going.
I got nothing, but it was that woman, and I like her.
She's a great actress.
But she's like a mom, and she's throwing this birthday party for her daughter, and then she finds that her husband came home, she didn't realize, and he's deceased. And so then she's like kind of faced with putting this birthday party together, but not telling the daughter because that would ruin her birthday. And it's a costume party, I guess, in a weird way.
Yes.
This is a super weird segment. The daughter pees herself, so she has to like change the costume, as well as hiding the husband's body and figuring out how to like mask his death, putting on a brave face to entertain the children and their parents and her daughter.
Yes.
And hilarity ensues. Not really hilarity, but...
Dark hilarity.
Dark hilarity. I thought this segment was funny.
I really like this segment, too. I like... again, I think this one is even more effective dealing with the anxiety of wanting things to be perfect.
100%.
And the face you put on for the outside world and knowing people are judging you based on how good of a job you do with things such as throwing your children birthday parties or just entertaining in general. At least for me as a woman, I feel that stress. I feel that stress anytime anyone comes into my home. I worry if what I'm showing them reflects positively on me. It's very real. It's a very real thing. I also feel the anxiety and stress of not wanting to hurt your children or your loved ones in any way and trying to protect them and taking on added stress to try to relieve them of that stress, trying to basically control the situation in every particular way so that other people aren't inconvenienced by your stress.
My favorite is when her friend is like knocking on the sliding door, like trying to find her, yeah. and she's like hiding behind the lamp, like, just go away. I'm not here. I'm still in my nightie. Like us again,
when someone's knocking on the door. And I love how at the end she's just like, and I can't give a fuck anymore.
Fuck it. You know, he's dead.
There's that anxiety break where no longer can I give any more fucks. I'm in my jammies. There's a party at my house, and my husband's in a panda costume, dead at
deceased,
the end of the table.
And I did it. It's fine. Yeah. We're gonna be fine. Yeah. That's all I could think the whole time was like, "We're gonna be fine." That's great.
Yeah. Did you feel more of a connection in terms of anxiety with this segment?
I enjoyed this segment, and I knew that I was going to because, again, like, I really like that actress. I don't remember her name though. But again, like. When I started watching this movie, I was sitting down to, like, watch a horror anthology. I thought this, like, I did think this segment was, like, hilarious.
It is. It's hilarious, but it's also, like, it's mentally terrifying.
Maybe I'm just
really
fucked up.
And I felt all of her stress.
I'm just like.
No, I agree. It's funny. Don't get me wrong. I definitely laughed at part of this, but I also, like my like anxiety brain was twitching and I totally. Was like, I know what you're feeling. I would do the same thing. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Well, I wouldn't do the same thing. I was like, I get it. I get you, girl. Yep. It's fine.
I'm following every decision you're making right now. I'm not saying they're the right ones, but I'm following every choice you're making as you're making
it. I just
it.
Like think of that like gif where it's like the dog in the burning house and he's like, it's fine. Everything's fine. We're good.
Yeah.
That's all I thought of.
And I especially love at the end of this movie, we have the title of the short. So it says The Birthday Party. And then it says, or the memory that Lucy suppressed from her 7th birthday that really wasn't her mom's fault. And then the next screen says, even though her therapist says it's probably why she fears intimacy. The end.
Perfect.
So great. Perfect segment. I loved that. I thought that was amazing. Really fun. I really liked this segment. Does it feel like a horror? No. But it fits. I think it fits. After the box, this, it seems like the logical way to sequence these films.
I was like, where the hell are we going?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I was like, that was hilarious, but what the hell's happening in my movie?
Yeah. So then we kind of switch. From this more symbolic, anxiety-driven to a more straight horror film. This one's called Don't Fall. It's written and directed by Roxanne Benjamin, again, who helped write The Birthday Party as well. And she also wrote and directed our Siren short from Southbound that we discussed also.
Roxanne's got it going on.
She does.
Because already she's all of my favorite segments in the situation
are
hers.
She kicks ass. I really like her. I agree. So this one, it takes place in the wilderness. Group of friends are in the wilderness and they are hiking and they see a painting on a mountainside which depicts three people and a demon behind them. They go back to their campsite, find out that the guy that chose this campsite just asked the guy at the gas station where to go, and he directed them here. Terror ensues. One of the girls wakes up in this cave, surrounded by more cave paintings, transforms into some sort of demon creature, and kills all of her traveling companions. This one is probably the most straight horror
100%
of the four.
I really liked how the demon lady moved.
Yeah.
I was bummed this one was so short, though. It seemed way shorter than the other ones.
This could have been a full length.
Yeah.
This could have been a full length feature. Yeah, again. Yeah. Roxanne Benjamin should be making these full length features. She's got a talent for it.
Roxanne, where you at, girl?
Yeah.
I like you.
I'm interested. I want to know what happens. I want to know the backstory. I want more information. But it's a short, so we don't get that. There's some funny parts. I like the character development, which is so brief, but really effective. I get a feel for who these characters are. I especially like when they're on the top of the mountain and they're taking pictures. And one dude's like, take my picture, bro. And he gives the other guy the camera and he's doing some like douchey pose. And he's like, what are you doing, man? Just be normal. It's like just happening in the background, but it cracks me up every time.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Because that's how friends talk to each other. So, you know, they're not supposed to be here. There's a fuck up in their party. He picked this place to go based on basically no information. They have a camper, but you know, Demon Girl gets them.
See ya.
Now, just to bring back the anxiety, because I feel like anxiety is a major theme in this, and maybe I'm reading into it, but that's how I feel about it. Our main girl that turns into a demon, she is the most anxious of the group. She is worried about scorpions. She is worried that they're somewhere they're not supposed to be and they're going to get caught or they're going to fuck something up.
That girl is me.
That's me too. I can't enjoy anything. I have to think of the worst case scenario all the time.
I'm like, whoa. We're doing what now?
Yeah.
Have we rented this camping place? We haven't?
Yeah. No.
Are we sure that we are not on private property? Are we going to get shot? Yeah. I have to go to a hotel.
Yes, that's me too.
Good.
She cuts her hand. They're like, you should put some bacitracin on that. She's like, fuck.
I'm like, bacitracin, where's the alcohol?
It's going to get infected. It's going to get infected.
Chop my hand off.
I'm dying. Quick, someone. Tourniquet. I need a tourniquet.
I'm glad that you and I are on the same boat. If we ever go camping together, it'll be incredibly relatable.
Yeah, so she's the one that turns into a demon. Supposedly because she cut her hand where this painting is and somehow awoke a demon that possessed her. The demon of the forest. The demon of the wood. Something we've seen a million times, but not like this. And I thought the demon was fairly effective. The CGI was pretty good. It was very dark, which I think helped it.
I think so, too.
I'm assuming that the actual funding for this wasn't very high, and I think they did a pretty good job keeping it dark and shadowy in the right spots to keep it from looking cheesy. I didn't get a cheesy vibe.
It made me kind of laugh because I was thinking to myself, so like most of the two out of the three remaining characters are wanting to help her. And then we have one character who's just like ready to peace out. And I'm like trying to think, like I would like while I was watching this movie, I was like trying to think to myself, like, would I be that friend that was like, oh, my God, she's sick. We have to help her. Or would I be like, lock the fucking doors. We got to get out of here.
Well, the guy that says I want to get out of here is the guy that saw her as a fucking demon.
That's true.
Okay. So he knows what the gist is. The other two are just seeing her huddled over in the corner and don't want to leave her. So I would fucking, you better believe, I'm sorry, if you're a demon, I'm going to leave you.
Please.
I'll call 911 and hopefully someone will come save
you. Get the fuck out of there. It's fine.
I am not an exorcist. I cannot save you. I am leaving and protecting myself and I love you. Goodbye.
In the same way, I'm like, survival mode.
Yeah.
We're getting out of here now.
I will remember where you are and I will have someone come out promptly to check on you.
We'll see you later.
Yeah. Bring some darts.
Yeah. Just don't move. Like,
bring some animal tranquilizers.
Exactly.
To shoot at her. And hopefully that helps.
Cool. I'm glad we're the same. So I was like, I'm real bummed out that this is the third segment because I enjoyed this one a lot. I had a good time.
Yeah, you know, it kind of seems like right before the end you get maybe not the best segment, but this was definitely one of the best segments. But I think still it feels like it was done well. I feel like I could have been maybe the final segment. It would have done better as like a big bang at the end.
I feel like it would have been confusing. I don't know. I feel like these movies are very confusing together.
I don't. But I understand why people feel that
way.
I feel like there's a constant theme. But I understand why people might not see that.
Sure.
Okay. So let's move on. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to agree, but I understand.
Yeah, no.
I was planning on, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I was going into this. We're not going to agree. We definitely, because I knew watching these movies that, or watching this movie that you it would enjoy it. Like,
yes.
Totally knew that we were going to go into this and have a fun discussion.
Well, and it's, and I understand why people don't like it. I 100% get it. I personally really enjoyed it. This is for me. This was created just for me, and I'm okay with that.
I'm good with it, too. So okay. I like talking to you about this. All right. So we got our final segment. Are we good with Don't Fall?
Yes.
Cool.
Yep. Let's do
it. Our final segment, Her Only Living Son, directed and written by Karen Kusama, who's always enjoyable.
Who is our invitation.
Fucking phenomenal. Yeah. That movie's great. And what, Jennifer's Body?
Yes.
Cool.
Correct.
Yay, memory. So we have this story of a mother who, at the beginning, we learn she is taking away her son from his father. They're basically running away from him. And then we see them present day, and she is just this worried mother, a la the Babadook. She just has this nervous face on all the time, and we see her son playing with the dog and murdering small animals, getting in trouble with the school, kind of. We get the feeling something's wrong. And then she sees like a murdered squirrel like tacked on the tree. Mm-hmm. And she meets the mailman, and he asks her out, and she's like, no. And then she has to go to the school because her son got in trouble. But then the mother who's, what, I don't even know what he did. I wasn't.
He pulled out a girl's fingernails.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's fun.
Yes.
And the mom, the other mom, understandably pissed off, leaves.
Yes.
The school is like, he's great. He's so special. And so then you're kind of like, something fucky is going on.
Yes.
And as the story unfolds, we basically learn that the father that she thinks, I don't even know if she thinks that he's the father, basically like sold her to the devil for mating purposes. Mm-hmm. And now she has this son that's going to be like this weird demon baby.
So the thing
kind of Rosemary's Baby is what I kind of like.
Correct.
Is what I was thinking the whole time.
Let me dig in on that a little
Go
further.
Go crazy, girl.
Okay. So the first time I watched this, I did not necessarily get it. I was like, this is kind of similar to Rosemary's Baby. No. It isn't similar to Rosemary's Baby. It is a continuation of Rosemary's Baby.
Ew.
So,
yes. I like it. So, wait, what was her name, when though? Not Rosemary.
Her name is not Rosemary, but she changed it. And there's quotes around it when they say it later. We'll get there.
Oh, did you watch this uncle's captioned?
Yes, I did. So we have, of course, I watch everything on closed caption. So we have her, she has a dream sequence at the beginning where you can hear her say, poor little Andy or Jenny. Second, I heard that the second time I watched it, I was like, Andy and Jenny, that's what Rosemary wanted to call her baby. Okay. Immediate choice number one that
Karen, I'm impressed. This.
Yes. So then we have that. We also know the dad is an actor, right? And in Rosemary's Baby, the dad is an actor.
I was wondering why they kept pointing that out.
Yeah, dad is an actor. Now he has all the riches in the world. He's been married several times. He has all these other children.
This may have just become my favorite segment.
Okay. Then her name tag says Cora, okay? But if you watch it on closed captions, Cora, when the mailman's talking to her at the end and he's saying, oh, he's the second coming and blah, blah, blah. He's like, Cora, like that's not her real name. And also, if you watch it on closed captioned, it's in quotes. Andy has claws similar to the demon in Rosemary's Baby. And you find out that he's stealing girls' fingernails. I'm thinking to put them over the claws that he's pulling out. Just a thought, not really about Rosemary's Baby, just thinking about that. So there is an interesting part where she's saying towards the end, I told the doctor that they were out to get you, that they were out to get us, but luckily he believed me and he helped me get away. So Basically, this is a reimagining of the end of Rosemary's Baby and then a continuation in which she goes to the doctor. She's worried. She tells him the truth. In Rosemary's Baby, he then calls the demon worshippers and they come and get her, and that's that. But in this reimagination, the doctor helps her get away. She's now away from all the devil worshippers and has been living in this small town with a changed name.
And they
can't find him.
This isn't the first town.
Correct. And they keep moving. And she still has to deal with raising Andy, as was her baby's name in the original, or as she wanted to name her baby in the original Rosemary's Baby.
Karen, I was worried about you, but you brought it back. You brought it back. I like it. That's phenomenal.
I like the idea of it. And the more I watched it, and like, again, the first time I kind of was like, okay, this has a Rosemary's Baby vibe.
That's totally
what
I thought.
The second time I watched it, I totally caught on to it. When I was like, when she said Andy or little Andy or Jenny, because she said poor little Andy or Jenny, the same way as Rosemary did in Rosemary's Baby. And it like clicked with me because I've seen Rosemary's Baby enough fucking times to know it little Andy or Jenny.
And I totally missed that.
Once I knew that.
Amazing.
No, and I did the first time too, until I started being like, and her, the dad's an actor and he has all this money and all this wealth that was promised to him.
That's the one thing that I kept on like, why do they keep mentioning that he's in Los Angeles and he has all these families? I'm bored. Not really, I'm bored, but like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So very cool. A very cool reimagining of it. Great idea. Great writing. I didn't like it that much.
I didn't either. But I like it more now.
I like the idea behind it. I think it's very creative. And I think the writing's not bad. I just don't really care about this scenario. I don't care about a world where Rosemary gets away from the demon worshippers and the witches and now is raising this demon. I didn't think the ending was very strong.
Where they both squeeze each other to death.
Yeah. Not my favorite, but I appreciate the merit and the thought behind it. And the more I found little things, peppered in,
oh, that's great.
It made it more fun anyway,
totally.
to notice these things, but not my favorite segment.
All right. Well, let's segue into our ranking.
Well, can we talk? I would like to, before we do that, talk about the, in-between segment.
That was my favorite segment of this. Actually, I wrote that. Like, my favorite thing about this was the stop motion in between each movie.
I really liked the stop motion animation. I thought it was really creepy.
It was super reminiscent. I'm 90% sure that you've never seen this movie. My family, after I graduated high school, they all moved to Boise, Idaho. And there was this film festival out there. I don't think it's a thing anymore, but it was called the True West Film Fest. And I would always go out there for it every year. And one year they had this film called Blood Tea and Red String. And it was a stop motion that this woman who was from Idaho had done. And it was absolutely stunning. And it remind this... The stop motion that was in between each thing. Like, I definitely recommend anybody who's into, like, stop motion weird shit, watch this movie because it's fucking awesome. And
that sounds great. I want to watch it.
Yeah, you really should because it's amazing. It reminded me of that, but, like, it was a whole movie. And it was – that was my favorite part about this whole film was the in-between stop motion.
I thought, yeah, it's fantastic. It doesn't necessarily make a bunch of sense. It makes a little bit of sense. And each segue kind of helps flow into the next segment in a way.
Like, it seemed very random, but I was also very, like, excited to watch that because it was literally my favorite part of this whole thing.
I think it was really fun. It was really creepy. I wish I could find some symbolism in there, but I don't think I can. I think it might be above my head if there is symbolism there. But it's really beautiful and really cool. I'd like to watch it just as all as one segment, just nonstop, just to kind of get a better feel for it. But it does have like kind of like a very girly things.
It's pretty, but also terrifying. I'm telling you, watch this Blood Tea and Red String.
Send it to me, Carly, and I'll put it in the show notes and people can find it if they're interested in seeing
it. Sweet.
If I can find it online too, maybe I'll post a link if it's on YouTube or something. Let's rate these. So my rating went, I liked Don't Fall the best, then followed by The Box, followed by The Birthday Party, and then finally Her Only Living Son.
I liked Don't Fall the best also, followed by The Birthday Party, followed by Her Only Living Son, followed by The Box.
Interesting.
I did not like The Box at all. I was so bored.
Was Siren your top for Southbound?
Yes.
So was mine. So we just both picked Roxanne Benjamin.
That's what I'm saying. She's a rock star.
Yeah. I didn't realize it when I was rating them. And after when I did the research, I was like, oh, apparently I really like Roxanne Benjamin because I picked her first for both. Yeah. So
I honestly Don't Fall was my favorite. Obviously, like it had the most horror elements. Birthday Party, pretty sure. I don't even know if like the story necessarily, like I just really liked the actress and I really thought the scenario was hilarious. So that was probably my second favorite for like the worst reasons, but like whatever. I could go without the last two. Like if I had never seen them, I wouldn't be bummed out about it.
Well, I think all in all, like if you guys have seen these, I'm interested in your thoughts. If you liked this movie or not. I know a lot of people don't. And again, I understand why. But I did like it. And I'm interested to hear from other people who might have liked it as well. As well as other people. If you have thoughts, please share them on social media. We're interested in hearing about it. Tell us what your favorites are. I'm interested to hear that. Okay, well, let's finish this out. We've been talking a long time, haven't we? Oh my goodness,
it's a long over episode. An hour.
It is a long episode. Okay, well, let's get into our segment, which we like to call
Social Media Question of the Week.
This week's question is, you hit a person with your car. They are dying. 911 directs you to a vacant hospital and wants to instruct you through the surgery. How do you proceed? So this is basically the same as the accident from Southbound. Same scenario.
Yes. So let's see what we've got. We've got on Twitter, at HorrorJunkiesFL, says, if I'm being sent to a vacant hospital, getting surgical advice over the phone isn't the worst part of my day. Scalpel ready. Love it. At Kung Fu Dracula says, let's go. I'm not a surgeon, but I stayed in a Holiday Inn last night.
I had to look up that. I'm like, I bet that's from a commercial that I never saw.
I like it.
I don't see commercials anymore.
At Cake of Doom says, I'd definitely go and do it. I already have extensive surgical experience. And then there's a picture of a, oh my God, I just...
Operation game.
Yes.
Yes. At Las Cthulhu says, seize the opportunity and harvest every organ I can. Replenish the purse and fridge in one go.
High five.
Wow.
High five.
Yep, that's how a Cthulhu should react to that situation. At John Keg says, dress as death. Instead of a surgical knife, use death's sigh. Keep them alive just long enough for them to hear me say, death is here.
So he's basically going to be dressed up as a naked Dementor.
I suppose so. At You're a Witch, Nina says, nope, no thanks. No way I'm cutting someone up in a vacant hospital. LOL.
At Boss Captain Ross says, I'd say fuck that and fuck you. If you're not going to take this seriously, I'm just going to hang up and look for a real doctor.
Good luck finding a real doctor in a vacant hotel.
Hospital.
Hospital.
At the Giant Be With
Did
You.
I say hotel?
Yeah, exactly. At the Giant Be With You says, well, I could try, but they're definitely dead at that point. So I guess I'm just going to wait there until an actual ambulance arrives instead.
Good luck with that.
At Readerly Geek says, I'd say send me to a non-vacant hospital because there's no way I'm cutting into some person. If they die on the drive there, so be it.
No. All right. I don't think in this scenario that's going to work, but maybe they hadn't seen
Southbound.
You're going to
be driving in a loop.
Yeah. At JPaw21 Jr. says, try to save them unless they say they're going to sue. Then I'll finish the job. I might sue if you kill me that way. That sounds horrible. At OGW Nostalgia says, no way in hell I'm going into that abandoned hospital. We're driving till I get to a real hospital. And on Instagram, we have Justin from the Horror Business says, unfortunately, it looks like now I have a death on my hands.
Love it. We have Astrojack says, well, as there is no other option, I'd have to go through with it. Plus, I used to kick ass that operation game with the tweezers and buzzer, so I'd have that shit covered. I like that we have a tie-in.
Yep.
Exploding Heads Horror Podcast says, from the outside looking in, I would think that the whole scenario is too sketchy. However, if it came down to it actually happening, I feel I would have no choice but to try my best and to save them, although I don't think I'd be very successful. Oh, and then we have my friend Shannon in between the novels saying, bring it. I watch a lot of Bones, so it's probably applicable, right? It totally is, Shannon. You're golden.
Yeah. Black Cat Horror Meme says, first, I'd find some Valium in the hospital and take some to calm my nerves. 10 minutes later, I'm a surgeon or an astronaut.
I'd pass out. Take some Valium.
And on Facebook, we have Tommy B that says, that's a recipe for disaster for everyone involved. On the upside, I don't actually have a car. And John M says, since my training mainly involves watching reruns of House MD, I'd probably harshly berate the patient and the 911 callers for their stupefying naivete, then hope for some piece of convenient inspiration that, against all the odds, saves their lives. I love that.
I do too.
Yes. Very nicely written, John M. I think I'm going to vote for Black Cat Horror Meme's answer. I'm going to say double for me. I would definitely need some kind of something to get through that, or else I'm just going to kill myself in that situation. Valium it is.
Yeah. I feel like I've watched enough Grey's Anatomy to know not to squeeze the lung if you're trying to reinflate it. So, I don't know. I feel like immediately I would be hesitant about this whole situation. I would not try to perform. I wouldn't try to intubate. I wouldn't try to perform any kind of surgery on a human.
So you would just let them die naturally.
I would try I feel like the only thing that I would do was just, you know, try to comfort them as they were there. Okay. I mean, I don't know. Like, I know enough about anatomy to know not to squeeze a lung. Right. And that, like, if they need to be, you know, they need some kind of, like, tracheotomy done and not a lung surgery. I don't know.
Right.
Call me crazy. But I know something about biology, and I know what not to do.
I hear you. Okay, well, let's close out then and talk about quickly, anything going on with you that you'd like to mention before we finish up?
I mean, I didn't really watch any super horror things. I told you that I started This Is Us this weekend. Also, Shudder had this competition with Clive Barker, and one of my friends, who is amazing. Actually, she didn't win like the main prize, but she won one of the TV show things. Like, they're going to make a TV show of her submission, basically.
That's amazing.
Which is super excited. Her name is Megan Rosati. I used to work with her, and she presented The Bloom, or Bloom, I think it's called. And she was one of the runner-ups, and they're going to give her a TV show on Shudder. So I'm super excited about that.
Well, we're definitely going to have to talk about it and have her on.
Yes. And she, that would be amazing. She was even like, I can be on your podcast now. And I was like, girl, you could have been on our podcast anyway, because she's super fucking sweet. She makes beautiful things. I'll send you her shit. I'll send you it also to maybe post in the notes or something like that. But she is phenomenal, and I'm super, super stoked for her.
I'm so excited. Congratulations, Carly's friend.
Megan.
We're excited for you, Megan. Woo! Okay. I haven't watched much. I did watch a couple horror movies that weren't required watching for us. I watched Chopping Mall.
I own that movie, but I've never seen it.
So great.
Isn't that weird?
You have to. It's so stupid. It's so great. It's on Amazon right now if anyone wants to check it out. It's just silly 80s ridiculousness. I think a lot of people have seen it, but it's a lot of fun. It's really a lot of fun. And then I watched Lords of Salem because I don't know why. It's one of those. Okay, so it's the only Rob Zombie movie I was ever interested in ever watching.
And
I watched it.
How was that? How'd that go?
Well, I'm never watching it again, so we're definitely not doing an episode on it.
See, this is why I wait.
I will say it's the best Rob Zombie movie I've seen.
Have you seen the 33?
But that's not saying much. I have not seen 31.
That's it.
You always call it something wrong.
It's because it's a Coheed and Cambria song.
Oh, is that right?
I just think of that immediately.
Oh, yeah, no, it's 31. No, I never saw 31 and I won't. I'm done. I'm done with Rob Zombie. This was his last chance. Although I will say the set design in Lords of Salem is awesome. It's about...
Is it on Shudder?
It's an hour and 50 minutes long.
Because I know you didn't pay for like it.
It's not on Shudder. It's on Stars. It's an hour and 50 minutes long, and I feel like it's about an hour and a half too long.
Amazing.
It would have been a really great short. Really beautiful set design. Not necessarily a bad idea. Just a bunch of unrealized side plots that don't matter. And just a lot of boringness. But the plot has potential. And the set design is gorgeous. That's about it. That's all I got. Sherry Moon Zombie is a thing.
I've watched a movie for less, so I don't know.
It's just too long.
Sure.
I was just like halfway through and I'm like, how is this not over yet? There's no story here. This could have been over forever ago. Would have been a great short, I think. Okay. Anyway, thanks to Troy from Cave Bastard for our song Sequencing the Drone and Jason Link for our amazing logo. Visit FinalGirlsHorrorcast.com if it's still there because I forgot to renew our website. We still have a lot of stickers to give away. So if you're interested in getting some stickers, send us an email, finalgirlshorrorcast@gmail.com, or find us on social media, send us your address, and I will send them some to you. I just got a bunch of new cute Halloween-esque note cards I'm excited to use, bought a bunch of new stamps, so let me know.
It's gonna be good.
I'll get them out. It's gonna be good.
Final Girls Horrorcast is part of the Phantom Podcast Network. We are available on downrightcreepy.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Tuned In, and pretty much anywhere else that you can stream a podcast. We are also very active on social media, so please interact with us. You can find us on Twitter at FinalGirlsHC and Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Final Girls Horrorcast.
Well, that's it for this week, my lovelies. Tune in next week when we have a special Sean Byrne episode. I'm so excited. Woo-hoo! We're going to be watching The Loved Ones, which is available for free on Tubi TV. It's T-U-B-I TV. It's a free app. You can get it anywhere. It has ads, which is annoying, but it's worth it to watch The Loved Ones. And then we're also going to be watching The Devil's Candy, which if you have not seen it, watch it immediately over and over again.
On
it's
it.
On Netflix.
Yes! I'm probably going to watch that tonight, to be real.
Girl, you're going to want to watch it like 20 times.
Oh, I know. That's why I'm going to watch it tonight.
I finished watching it, and I almost pressed play again to watch it again. That's how much I
love
it.
I love it so much.
I hope you love it that much, too. But until then, I'm Amy.
And I'm Carly.
Bye! Bye.